Well, good morning. Nice to be with you. And if you are new around here, my name's Tim. Looking forward to diving into this topic this week. This is our third week in the series, Fixed Religion. Should be easy enough, shouldn't it? What do you reckon? This is a big one, and it's a heated one in our society at the moment. And so I appreciate your prayers this morning as we dive in. About 20% of the people who we asked, how would you fix the world, responded with an answer, something to do with this, about fixing religion. And the responses came in two kind of forms. Number one, some people said, what we need to do really to fix religion is just to get rid of all religion. Another group of people said, no, we need to actually just get rid of extremism within religion. So what I'm going to attempt to do this morning is to look at both of those two things and consider some thoughts about that, go to the Bible, see what Jesus has got to say. And I trust you'll find that helpful and challenging. And as Adrian said, there will be time for questions at the end. So text away and we'll see which ones we can deal with. First thing I'll say is this. It is quite easy to see why people are pointing to religion as the problem these days. There's a lot of evidence. You don't even need to kind of go back in history like people used to kind of go back to point to the Crusades 900 years ago and the evils that were done by both Islam and Christianity back in that time. You can actually just look at what's happening right now in the world around us. It's right in our face. The violence and the terrorism that's happening because of the jihadi groups, Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State militants, beheadings in Iraq and Syria, siege situations in Paris, France, and even here in our own city. It's right in front of us, the problems. You could look at the Palestinian-Israeli conflict that continues to happen over the Gaza Strip. You might even want to acknowledge which is the big one for us as a nation, the Royal Commission into Child Sexual Abuse in Religious Institutions in our own country. There's lots of evidence that would seem to point towards religion being the problem. It seems pretty overwhelming. And some people would go so far as to claim that really, religion is the number one cause of all the problems. It's the number one cause of all wars. And certain popular atheists like Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins, would say things like this. In fact, Christopher Hitchens, in his one of his more recent books, a book called God is Not Great, spends time explaining how he believes how religion poisons everything. That's his subtext. Religion poisons everything. Now, with thinking like that around the place, it's no surprise that people are suggesting the solution really is to just get rid of religion. I saw a comment on Facebook recently on one particular thread that was dealing with the issues that are emerging from religions at the moment, and one fellow offered this as the plain and simple solution. This man. It's plain and simple what needs to be done is rid Australia of all religions bar none. One religion chops the head off non-believers, whilst another religion has no problem interfering with young boys. I can see the problem. Can you all see the problem? One dirty word, religion. Now, there's an expletive here. So now, pee it off and let's live in a peaceful, friendly, don't care if you're black, white, yellow or brown country. And maybe you've heard comments similar to that or you've heard people express things similar to that. It almost sounds like an angsty kind of version of the John Lennon song Imagine, which says, let's just get rid of religions effectively. Imagine there's no religion, no God, no heaven, no hell. Just us trying to get along. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? That's the answer. So there's a lot of people out there suggesting that is the answer. Just get rid of religion altogether. In fact, when we did go door knocking and walking up to people on the street during the Summerfest time, asking them this question, there were a number of people who just outright said, just get rid of religions, or particularly, just get rid of Islam. And some people one fellow even said, just nuke the whole Middle East. That'll solve the problem. It's an interesting response. That's a response that's full of very real frustration and fear. But is that the solution, to just get rid of religion? I've got four things I want you to consider, four things I want to say in regards to that as a possible solution to get rid of religion. First of all, to the claim along the thinking lines of your Christopher Hitchens, who says religion poisons everything, I just want to say really, does religion poison everything? That's a kind of a strange claim to make, really, because religion, just as a category, is really just the organising of people's thoughts or answers to life's big questions. You know, a person's system of belief. Is the fact that we have different systems of belief in existence the problem? Is the category of religion the problem? Well, Christopher Hitchens would go very close to saying, yes, that is the problem. Now, to that I would say, I think I could write a book too on all the evil and wickedness and corruption and hypocrisy that I can see emerging from within religions. There's terrible things that have been done in the name of religion. There's wickedness there. I agree that there would be a lot of evidence to point to issues within religion. But does that mean religion poisons everything? Because I would at least want to point to one religion when it is lived well and truthfully. Christianity has actually brought great good to society. Yeah, evils have been done in the name of all different religions, but you do want to say it's not simply poison that comes from the existence of religions. Christianity, I want to suggest, is largely responsible for many great good things that have come to us. Let me just rattle off a few. Hospitals, schools, you know, care for young people in multiple different forms, orphanages, hostels. The whole social justice structure finds its roots in Christianity. The abolition of slavery, the roots of the civil rights movement. The beauty that we find in art and culture, you know, largely early was all religious art, paintings, music, architecture. The very ethical foundations of society, particularly the Western society, comes from Christianity. Our law and justice system founded on Christianity. So I think we're going to be careful about just suggesting that religion poisons everything, because great good has come from religion when it's lived well. It's just something we need to acknowledge. So I'm not sure it can be said that religion poisons everything. It's a strange claim to make, but lots of strange claims being made these days. Secondly, to the claim that suggests that religion is the cause of all the problems, and particularly the cause of all wars, and maybe you've heard that one. I've heard it lots. Religion is the number one cause of all the wars. It's simply not true. And it's really not that hard to look at the history of the wars and see that they're not primarily caused by religion at all. Even just looking at the last 100 years, the major wars that have been experienced in the last century, World War I, World War II, the Cold War, you could mention a few others, largely driven by nationalism, not religion. You know, people's own excessive pride for their own nation and the expansion of their own borders of their nation. That has driven most of the wars. But some have actually gone back and looked further than just 100 years, looked back actually at the entire history of mankind and looked at all the wars that we know of and looked at the reasons for them. And I quote Phillips here, who's done extensive research and put together a 3-volume encyclopedia called The Encyclopedia of Wars. You can go and get the 3-volume encyclopedia if you want and read it, or you can just hear one of the main conclusions he comes to as he assesses 1,763 wars in human history. Here's the percentage. Only 7% of all the wars in human history, he says, are of a religious nature. The other 93% of wars are non-religious wars. And of that 7% that are of religious nature, 4% are Islamic wars. The other 3% is all the other religions combined. Now, that's just worth hearing and noting, isn't it? Now, if you can't get figures in your head, I'll put it into a pie chart so you can just see it graphically. So here it is as an image. There you go. All that red there is the 93% of wars in human history, non-religious. The blue is Islamic wars. The yellow or green is all the other religions. It's pretty clear that religion is not the primary cause of war. It's just not the case. That's a myth. and it's pretty easy to knock on the head. Yeah? What is really clear, actually, is that actually it's non-religious motives. It's naturalistic philosophies that have actually got, who bear the blame for nearly all of the wars in human history. That's what we need to acknowledge. Yeah? And in saying that, this leads into my third point, in saying that it's actually the attempts through history to get rid of religions that have caused incredible violence and oppression and pain. And here's the third point. How would you suppose, to the person who says the answer is just get rid of religions, how do you suppose we go about doing that? Even if you try and pick one religion, to the person who says just get rid of Islam, get rid of Muslims out of Australia, which people are saying, how do you suppose we actually do that? Because really the only way to do it is to do it by force, yeah, to legislate against religious belief or one particular religion and actually enforce that. How do we do that? Well, friends, it's been attempted a number of different times in history in different countries, and it's horrific. You know, technically it's called totalitarianism, or one form of it is communism or socialism. And how's that gone? Well, if you look at Cambodia under Pol Pot, 2.5 million people slaughtered for having religious beliefs. You go to communist China under Chairman Mao, 38 million people slaughtered for having religious belief. You go to communist Russia under Stalin, 43 million people slaughtered. Friends, that is just horrific. Attempts to get rid of religion have been so unimaginably horrific in the 20th century. Estimates are around 100 million people have been slaughtered in different countries' attempts to get rid of religion. So do we really want to just suggest the solution is to get rid of religion? Because sounds like you need to have a whole lot of blood on your hands to make that happen. Probably not the solution. I understand why people say it. You know, there's frustration, there's pain, you know. But friends, it's not the solution to just outlaw religion altogether and enforce it. That's a horrific form of oppression, even worse than what you'd see come from religion. The fourth thing I want to say is this. To the suggestion that the solution is to get rid of all religion, I want to acknowledge that beneath that suggestion is an assumption or a claim that really all religions are just the same anyway, really. You need to get rid of them all because they're all just the same. They might have little differences, but they're all the same, kind of all heading in the same direction. Get rid of a lot of them. So someone has described it as all religions are like rafts bobbing around on a river heading downstream together. They're all a little bit different. They're all jockeying for position, but they're all basically bobbing down the stream, heading in the same direction. And many would put Christianity as one of the major world religions in the stream, bobbing along as well. Well, if Christianity is in the stream, and you might well put it in the stream of world religions, I would want to suggest that Christianity is not a raft. Christianity is like a motorboat powering in the opposite direction. It may well be a world religion, but Christianity is so unique, and Jesus, as its founder and author, is so unique, the last thing you want to do is lump that in with all the other religions. I want to suggest it's a grave mistake to just lump Jesus in along with Muhammad and Buddha and Krishna and think they're all heading in the same direction. Friends, Jesus stands out as heading in the complete opposite direction, and Christianity is incredibly unique. Have you ever considered the uniqueness of the claims of Jesus and the life of Jesus and the very heart of the true religion of Christianity? Because it's like nothing else. And you may be new to these things, and you may be thinking, yeah, it's just one of the many things and they're all pretty similar. And for you particularly, I'd love you to consider a couple of things we're going to look at now about what Jesus says and about what Jesus does, which I think point to how incredibly unique he is. And you might be quite surprised to hear that Jesus hates what you hate about religion. He actually agrees with much of what we think is disgusting that emerges from within religion, the evils of religion. He's very critical of the wickedness in religion, and he speaks and acts against the very same things that disturb us. Have you ever seen that? Because I want to show you. If you've got a Bible, turn to the Gospel of Matthew, which is one of the biographies of Jesus' life that records for us his words and his actions. If you don't have a Bible, don't worry, they will be coming up on the screen as well. I want to show you a few passages in Matthew and then also go to John's Gospel as well. Matthew chapter 23, we'll start there. And I want to show you two things. I want to show how Jesus attacks hypocrisy in religious leadership. And I want to show you how Jesus pursues love and goodness and mercy for people above a strict religious code that's been perverted and distorted over time anyway. Yeah, those two things. First one, Matthew chapter 23. Here's Jesus speaking to religious leaders and calling them out about their corruption and their hypocrisy. Chapter 23, verse 23. Woe to you, which is Bible speak for curse you. Yeah. Or I think of other words, but woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. Right? Strong words. You give a tenth of your spices and mint and dill and cumin, but you've neglected the more important matters of the law. Justice, mercy, faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. He attacks the Jewish religious leaders and says, you hypocrites, you've corrupted what was given to you as good. You're following the letter of the law or traditions that you've added to the law in such a way that you're actually failing to actually give yourself to the heart of the good law God gave you, which is to practice justice and mercy and faithfulness. You're not caring for people. At the expense of people, you're following these religious laws. And Jesus calls them on it. He hates what we hate when he sees hypocrisy and corruption in religious leaders. Have you seen that before? I'll show you a few more. Come to Matthew chapter 9. And here's an example of how Jesus pursues good and love of others above observing some corrupted interpretation of a religious law. Here's Jesus hanging out with and being friends with the people he's not meant to be friends with. Religious law would prohibit hanging out with certain outcasts and marginalized people. But Jesus, Matthew 9, verse 10, while having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors, and sinners came and ate with him at the disciples. These are your outcasts, you're marginalized, you're oppressed. You're unclean people of society. When the Pharisees, that's the religious leaders, saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? On hearing this, Jesus said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. And Jesus takes them to the very heart of the law in that. I've not come to call the righteous, but the sinner. He's saying, you guys are keeping this law and adding traditions to it in such a way that you are actually, sacrificing, but missing the very heart of the law, which is mercy. And Jesus is saying, you've missed the boat altogether. And Jesus goes and befriends people and loves people and is concerned for people that are considered outcast by others. Yeah. Look at Matthew chapter 12. Kind of Matthew chapter 12, verse 9. Again, Jesus is going against a particular religious law or tradition, which was given for a good reason, to keep the Sabbath and rest and worship God on the holy day. But things had been added over time, and the law itself really had been corrupted to the point where people would keep the Sabbath at the expense of loving people who needed help. And Jesus makes that really clear here, Matthew chapter 12. He went into their synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to bring charges against Jesus, they asked him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? He said to them, if any of you has a sheep and it falls in a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a person than a sheep? Therefore, is it lawful to do good on the therefore it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. He's kind of redefining and taking them back to the heart of the law. Then he said to the man, stretch out your hand. So he stretched it out and he was completely restored, just as sound as the other. But the Pharisees went out and plotted how they might kill Jesus. Yeah? They're keeping the Sabbath at the expense of helping people. And Jesus just says to them, that is ridiculous. That's stupidity. He points it out. He calls them on it. He hates what we hate in religion. The stupidity of keeping perverted religious instruction over above caring for people and helping people. Jesus heals the man. And one final one I want to take you to in John's Gospel, John chapter 8. I think it's a really kind of current example. Recently, we've seen a lot of... one thing about extremist groups at the moment with technology these days is they film a lot of the atrocities they do and post it on the web. So there's been a lot of videos posted. People who have committed some kind of sin, say you go to Saudi Arabia, a woman's committed sin and she's taken out in public and she's stoned to death or she's beheaded. It's just horrific. I haven't watched all the ones that are posted. You just can't. It's too horrific. Look, this is a situation where Jesus arrives on the scene where a woman's about to be executed. People are gathered around, men are gathered around her with rocks and they're going to stone her to death because she's been caught in adultery. And look at how Jesus interacts with this situation. Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. Again, he stooped down and wrote in the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time. The older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go and leave your life of sin." This wonderful compassion and mercy showed to her. Yeah, it's not that Jesus is unconcerned about sin. No, he says, no, go and leave your life of sin. Yeah, so he's not unconcerned about sin, but he chooses to show incredible compassion and mercy and does not condemn her for that. Jesus is horrified by the same things we're horrified, the evils that emerge from within religion, and he condemns them outright. Have you seen these things about Jesus? He does that. He condemns wickedness in religion, and then he offers a wonderful solution. We'll get to that in just 1 minute. But I do want you to see, just by taking you to these passages, that it's important not to lump Jesus in with the rest of religious leaders. It's important not to just lump Christianity in with the rest of corrupted religion and think that the solution is to get rid of him and Christianity along with the others. Can I suggest that to do that would be to throw the baby out with the bathwater? It'd be to throw the solution out with the issues. Don't do that. Don't do that. Now, some of you have been following me along here and some of that has kind of helped you to see that, okay, so the solution might not be to get rid of all religions. And those who kind of think into this a little more will usually move away from that as a realistic solution and drift towards the next most popular suggestion as a solution, which is to not get rid of all religions, but just get rid of the problem bits in religion. And most people articulate that as get rid of extremism within religion. Get rid of radicalism or fundamentalism in religion. Let's consider that. Extremism really is just to have extremely strong convictions about your beliefs. You know, radicalism is like the hardline religion. Fundamentalism is effectively just to hold firmly to fundamentals within a belief system. But many people are suggesting that that type of religion is the problem, because it's that type of religion that causes people to be polarized and divisions to come, which leads to aggression. So people will say, weed out extremism or weed out absolutism. Anyone who claims to have the absolute truth, that's suggested to be the problem. The people who say, this is right and that's wrong. Or we have the truth and what you believe is false. Or these people are therefore in and those people are out. Most suggest that that type of religion is the problem, because that type of the religion is people holding up a truth, an absolute truth, over and above kind of just getting on with each other and being kind to each other and trying to peacefully coexist. I think that's what Hitchens really hates, is the suggestion that truth is more important than getting along with each other. And so people say that type of religion ends up justifying division and even aggression in the name of God. And the Pope, the current Pope of the Catholic Church, would tend to agree with that, actually, if you read some of his more recent quotes, where he says things to the effect of, there's no place for fundamentalism or dogmatism in religion today. It's a violence against God. It seems as though he too would say the problem is fundamentalism within religion, extreme belief within religion. So can you see the solution that's been offered here? The solution is this. Let's embrace as the highest value getting along with each other and peace with each other and abandon the concept of absolute truth because it's just silliness and it just causes division. So let's get rid of caring so much about truth and care most about living peacefully and just getting along with each other as the highest value. Would that work? Does it work? What would the world actually be like if we really lived like that? With the highest value being getting along and not caring about truth or abandoning the concept, the category of absolute truth. Let me suggest what that might mean for us. Religions would effectively be stripped of their substance. Yeah? All you'd end up with is religions that are just moderate, tolerant, easygoing, inclusive, affirming, accepting of many paths towards God, many truths about God, pluralism, which is to acknowledge many truths. There's no one truth. Everyone has their own truth. It's okay to believe whatever you want. So what's left there is such a moderate form of religion in all its forms that would lack any kind of conviction and therefore, I think, lack any kind of good action and reform for society when it sees it. What would it mean for the generations we're raising if we really did raise them to value getting along over and above any concept about truth? Well, instead of, like what we have seen with previous generations, people being raised with clinging to the values of justice and truth and loyalty, we would see generation being raised with pluralistic belief systems, just acknowledging anything and feeling like it's okay to believe whatever you want and it's all going to be okay. I do suggest we would then step back and see in that generation a whole generation of people who just don't have the same conscience as the previous generation. They don't have the same respect for authority. They don't have the same convictions about right and wrong and even justice as the previous generation. And don't you reckon that just sounds familiar? I think our society has been pursuing this experiment somewhat for the last at least 30 years as our society grows increasingly secular. I'm kind of part of that generation. I find it hard not to be influenced by a pluralistic belief system. And I'm not sure, if you look at the evidence, that it's made things any better. In fact, I think the evidence points in the opposite direction. Things are getting worse. And now I sound like a grumpy old man, you know. Back in my day, things were good. But now, it's all going to seed. Do we really think, honestly, if we hold up the concept of just loving each other, getting along with each other above truth, that's the best way? Can you think about what that would mean for the authority structures of our country, the leaders in our own country? Imagine our politicians really living like this. Look, let's just get along. Let's not worry about truth. You know, they'd be making suggestions or promises and they'd be breaking them, which is our problem with politicians anyway, isn't it? The broken promises that they make, and they would turn to us and say, well, it doesn't matter what I said. There is no truth. What matters now is that we all get on. Oh, I know I might have suggested that, but that sounds like it's going to cause a bit of a stir, so let's just do something else. You know, I don't think that's the kind of leaders we want. They're certainly not the kind of law court judges that we want, the ones who end up making judgment according to what's going to cause the least stir among people, you know, over and above declaring what the truth is and handing down a conviction. Friends, a society that holds up getting on over and above truth, what you'd see is trust and loyalty and justice and truth just disappear. I don't think that's a society we want to live in. I certainly don't want to. It would be terrible and horrific. Friends, to abandon truth, I think is just absurd, really. It's naive. And it's a contradiction anyway. For someone to say, here's what we need to do. We need to abandon truth. Is to actually make a claim, an absolute claim, and to say the truth is there is no truth. So it's just a contradiction anyway. It doesn't work. Yeah? It doesn't make sense.
Friends, what is Jesus' solution? What does he offer? I said we'd get there. Jesus' solution is this, and it's really unique. He at the same time agrees with us in a sense, in that he hates most of what we hate in the evils of religion. But the solution he offers is not, therefore abandon truth. It's the very opposite of that. He hates the evils of religion and condemns that, and then he affirms truth and goes and makes absolute statements about truth to do with himself. And he does it in a very hard-hitting, uncompromising way. He absolutely condemns the evils of religion, but then he upholds and affirms absolute truth. One of the classic places to go, if you've still got the Gospel of John open, is go to John chapter 14. And this is one of the many classic places where you see Jesus uphold truth and champion truth and cling to the true truth, the ultimate truth, as the solution above just trying to get along. Look what he says, John 14:6. I am the way, the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Friends, that's radical. That's pretty extreme, by the way. That's hard-hitting. That's uncompromising. It doesn't leave any room for people to differ. He says, no, there is a truth, and the truth is me. I am the only way to get to the Father. There's no other way to God except through me. He's effectively saying, this is the truth and everything else is false. This is what's right, it's me, and everything else is wrong. Jesus makes exclusive claims about truth to do with himself, effectively saying, I'm it. It's one thing to love Jesus the man because of what he does. You know, nice guy, good things. It's another thing to actually hear what he says and consider his claims, because he doesn't mix his words. You can look at a passage like this and do some kind of gymnastics with it to turn it into some kind of metaphor for something, and I've seen people do that. But you say, I reckon that's pretty clear. The plain reading of the text is pretty clear. Jesus says there is a truth and it's him, and that's where life is going to be found. One thing we do need to consider in regards to truth is truth does divide, doesn't it? That's what it does. By nature, truth divides. It says this is right and that's wrong. But the absolute truth, the true truth, the truth that is Jesus, is the very thing that will bring life and peace and ultimate solidarity. And Jesus calls us to choose truth above the concept of just trying to get along. I want to leave you with one example before I wrap up and open up for questions. And the one example I want to give you is this. A genuine faithful follower of Jesus will hold to these same two things. A genuine faithful follower of Jesus will condemn evil within religions, the evils that emerge from, a wickedness that come from religion, and then at the same time uphold truth. Ultimate truth. That's what a faithful follower of Jesus will do. And Jesus says, my faithful followers, you'll be able to spot who they are. They'll believe this. And he says, you'll know my disciples by their love. The distinguishing factor of a follower of Jesus is to take on his very nature, which is a nature that loves and shows mercy and compassion and kindness and values justice and what's right. And a classic example that so many men and women who have walked faithfully with Jesus through the history and done incredible good. One classic example is Paul, which is why I had Acts chapter 17 read earlier. Paul, think with me for a moment. If you've never heard of the man Paul, he wrote half the New Testament, or more than half the New Testament, right? Really key figure in Christian history. Paul was radically changed. He used to be, you could call it an extremist terrorist. That's who Paul was. Think about it. He was so obsessed with extinguishing this new form of religion called Christianity that he was obsessed with hunting down Christians, arresting them, putting them on trial or not, and just getting them executed. That's what Paul did. That's who he was. And then he's radically transformed, radically changed to being someone who is honoring and respectful and loving. What brings the change and transformation? It's not that he abandons truth. It is that he embraces the absolute truth of Jesus and is transformed by the nature of that truth, which is Jesus. And you see the transformation illustrated in the way he then goes on and behaves. So in Acts chapter 17, the passage that we had read, Paul arrives in Athens and he arrives in a city that's full of different kinds of gods and different kinds of worship of God. You know, Greeks have got hundreds and thousands of gods. And he walks into the city and he sees people worshiping their gods, and he's come to know the absolute truth of Jesus. And the first thing it says in that passage is he's greatly distressed. He's distressed that they've got God wrong. He's distressed that they don't yet know the truth of Jesus, that they're actually rejecting their creator and sustainer. And he's so distressed that he acts. But how does he act? Well, he doesn't strap a bomb to himself and blow up the joint, which is what he probably would have done if that existed, if that was the trend back in that day. He certainly used to see people executed, killed. What he does do is he, in love, respects them and honours them enough to come to them and enter into a conversation with them and begin to reason with them and call them to come and consider the truth of Jesus. And he does it in a respectful, honouring way, but in a way that holds up the truth of Jesus, because he's concerned that they need to hear about Jesus and come and put their trust in their God, their creator, their sustainer, who's come after them, but they're running from him. There you go. There's the truth of Jesus illustrated in the transformation in a man. I'll pause now and invite Adrian up. And I trust we've had a few questions come through, and we'll see if we can spend some time just...
My one went blank. Can I grab Josh's one?
He's talking about his microphone.
I probably just turned it off. I don't know how to turn it back on. Now, a couple of good questions here. I like this one to kick off with. We're running a bit late, but guys, so we're not going to get to many. So I think this is in response to you pointing out how loving Jesus is. What about God destroying cities and taking land for his own people? So I think that's sort of throwing back to sort of incidences in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Where it seems like the Christian God isn't all about peace.
Yeah, good. Certainly in the Old Testament... the Old Testament, which points towards the New and is ultimately understood and fulfilled in the New Testament, Jesus. In the Old Testament, you do get, holy war being waged, which is really difficult to get your head around how God would call his people to do that. There are a number of things that by nature are very different from the way that from the other ways holy wars are waged, but it's complex. We did deal with that when we did it with the teaching series on Judges, and so there's a fair bit more to be said there. What I would always direct people to is say, today the way to follow God through Jesus, ultimately is fulfilled in Jesus, is never violent. And you are never called in the name of God to ever be violent. So Jesus, there's no room for justifying violence and aggression towards others if you are a follower of God in Jesus, the truth. Yeah, one of Jesus' followers did attempt something violent at one point in Jesus' ministry when Jesus was being arrested, pulled out a sword to chop off the guard's ear, and Jesus immediately rebukes him, "Put your sword away, that is not my way." Jesus says, "You'll know my disciples by their love." There's no justification really to be found in the New Testament, the fulfillment of the old, where it was all heading toward, to be a follower of Jesus and pursue violence in any way. Yeah.
All right. I like Jesus, but I don't like his followers. If Jesus' followers passionately embraced his message, I would find it easier to believe that Jesus is truly the way.
I'm with you. I like Jesus. I love Jesus. His followers are the problem. Well, in the sense that none of Jesus' followers do it perfectly, and so even in myself and in others, there will be fault, and there will be a lack of right living, which will be very painful. So I'll be the first to acknowledge that that's the problem. But just because of the problem with the followers, That does not mean there's a problem with Jesus and the truth of the Christian religion. Yeah. So I'll always be the first to kind of say, yeah, followers, troublesome. Although people who have lived faithfully and genuinely, you can definitely see how wonderful Jesus is. And there's great evidence of that. But I'll always point people to Jesus and say, he's the one we follow. He's the one we go to. He is where the solution is. And what he brings for us in the truth of Christianity is wonderful. What was the second part of that? Or was that...
I would find it easier to believe that Jesus is the truly the way if Jesus' followers was able to
follow him. Yep. I think I kind of got there.
Yeah, okay. As I said, we've run out of time, so I'm going to finish with this one. I'll jump down. This is a bit of a throwback to one that was asked at 8:30, but I think it was worth asking. There seems to be so many different varieties of Christianity. It seems like Christians can't even decide what Jesus said. So how can we know what's the truth?
You're going to give me another go at that one. I think I botched it first time. Yeah, right. There's so many different brands of Christianity. Well, there is. There are a number of different Christian groups. There are the fundamental tenets of the Christian faith. But then there are a number of different kind of groups. And some of those differences between groups, by the way, are not primary differences. They're just superficial differences. And so, therefore, I don't think are a huge problem. The fact that Christianity has different denominations, you might say, and different groups, I don't think is evidence that the fundamental tenets of the Christian, there's a problem there at all. The problem really is in our expression, our following of Jesus, which will always be imperfect. And will always have its faults. It doesn't mean the truth of Christianity is not valid. Yeah. Yeah? Okay. How about I say one thing and then pray? You got a question. Okay?
Question.
Yes?
Are we talking about the responsibility of people, religion, and nationalistic philosophy? Who is behind that?
Who is behind naturalistic philosophy?
Religion and naturalistic philosophy that bring all the trouble in the world.
Who's behind all that?
Yeah.
So the Bible would say behind naturalistic philosophy, behind all the other different religions, there is an enemy of God, Satan.
Yeah.
So there's a sense in which he's responsible, but also the sense in which... It's not just him, it's a broken human fallen nature that actually rejects a God who's revealed himself to us and runs from him to all other different forms of worship. And the Bible, Romans chapter 1 would make it really clear that they're different forms of idolatry and they're actually suppressing the truth, not genuinely seeking after it. I'll wrap it up there though, yeah? Okay. Yes.
I put to you this, I'm forgiven. I'm not perfect, but I'm forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
Did that sum up the reality of Christ to me? I'm not perfect still, but I am forgiven. I have a solid foundation in Christ Jesus, and there is no condemnation for those in Christ Jesus.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me just say one thing and then I'll pray. When Paul gave his, speech in Athens, there are a number of different responses that he received. There were some people who sneered, which just kind of laughed and said, Jesus rose from the dead, as if. And that might be you today. You might be looking into these things and thinking, nah. That would be a great concern to us. We would love for you to continue to consider these things. There's so much to be considered. Christianity effectively makes claims that demand to be considered. A man who rises from the dead as the main proof that needs to be looked into. You want to look if there's evidence for the resurrection. Yeah. Secondly, people said they wanted to hear more. And you might be someone who you've heard a bit, you want to hear more. That's wonderful. There are so many ways to investigate this more. Keep coming along. Come along to life. Keep looking into this. This is where life can be found. And thirdly, there were some who actually decided to put their trust in Jesus and follow him right there and then. And maybe you're at the point where you've been looking into these things for quite some time and you've heard enough, you've seen enough. It's time to actually put your trust in Jesus and believe in him as the truth and pursue him above all else. Please do that today. Come and grab me or Adrian or someone or pray. Don't put that off. Let me pray now.